welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Paul Wells, CEO for SureCore. Good morning, Paul, and welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Dan. Great to be here with you again.
So, Paul, we've talked before, but my first question for the podcast is how you originally came to semiconductors.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story, actually, because I, many years ago, back in the 80s, I did my degree at Manchester University. And my final year project, I actually got to design what was called back in the day an uncommitted logic array. And I was actually designing a computation unit. And yeah, we designed the chip using Ferranti's early what was called the EULACAD software. And we actually got samples back and I was able to plug them into a PCB I designed myself. So I really got bitten by the bug. You know, building my own chip at that age was just incredible to me.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I started out in computers, software, but you know, the jobs were really in the hardware. So you know, back then it was one software job for 10 hardware jobs. So I ended up in the hardware business, and now it's kind of the opposite. It's mostly software jobs. But I don't think there's been more exciting time to be in the semiconductor industry. And I think we're going to cover a little bit why. I have some questions about your company. But first, give me the quick pitch about SureCore.
Yeah, I mean, SureCore, really, we realized when I started SureCore, should I say, that the industry was really going through a transition. And in order for companies to be able to provide better differentiation, they needed to put more memory on chip. And memory really hadn't changed in over 20 years. And we realized that it was really a power consumption bottleneck. So our focus has been on how do we reduce that power consumption? How do we drive that down to enable people to deliver product, particularly those with small form factors you need in hearing aids, smartwatches, IoT devices, etc. And we can help companies really hit the power consumption targets to make those products viable.
Right, right. Yeah, I spent quite a few years of my career in the SRAM business. I know we've talked about that before, so we're kindred spirits here. But, you know, you've been around for 10 years, but you've had some recent announcements that seems to have shifted gears. You know, you've signed multiple license deals for smartwatches, fitness trackers, and earbuds and other things. You know, what's changed in the marketplace?
I think what's changed is I think the competition's really hotting up. And if you look at things like smartwatches, I mean, smartwatches are transitioning from just being step trackers to becoming fitness aids to becoming health trackers. And in order for people to build that additional product differentiation in and to give those products that kind of capability, they need more processing power and they need more memory. The problem is you stick more memory in and SRAM is extremely power intensive. So the key thing about a watch or a wireless earbud, they don't need high levels of processing power all the time. It can basically be varied depending on the application, what the product's doing at a given time. And we have our Everon product family, which is extremely advantageous to these kind of developers because you can wind the operating voltage all the way down to near threshold, still do some useful processing, but then when you need to actually really turn up the processing power, you can just increase the voltage and you can deliver high performance.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, when I was doing SRAM, you know, the standard way to achieve low power in a chip is to drop the voltage, but, you know, that always created different problems and different challenges, let's say. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, dropping the voltage with SRAM is a real challenge. What we're seeing now is more and more companies are getting increasingly confident about low voltage design methodologies. They're finding that you can wind the voltage down on the standard cells fairly easily, and pretty much the performance of the standard cell libraries will scale with the voltage. However, as we all know, standard SRAM, that's not possible. Now, a lot of vendors will address that by providing dual rail memories, but really all that does for people is it gives them a way to cut the leakage current, should I say, when the thing is in a retentive standby state. Doesn't really help them to be able to cut the the power contributed by the memory. And the problem then is, if you want to just cut the operating voltage to the logic, what you need to do is you then need to ring the memories with a whole bunch of level shifters. And that creates headaches for both the physical design team and also the STA team as well. So you solve the power, say, you solve to an extent the power problem, but at the expense of creating much more problems in the verification. Where our solution comes in is the Everon memory can connect directly to the logic. You can scale the power down, the voltage down, saving power, optimize for particular modes of operation, and then you just bring the voltage back up again. And it's all done in one fell swoop. No level shifters, and the STA for the whole piece of logic can be done in one go, making things much, much easier for the team.
That's interesting. Interesting. So what does SureCore do differently, and what kind of power savings does your approach provide?
Yeah, that's a good question, Dan. We often quote 50 to 60% dynamic power savings. And the beauty of Everon, because you can cut the operating voltage down to, say, 0.66 volts nominal in a 40 nanometer process, means that you can actually have the memory sitting there, and you get obviously the leakage benefits as well. Operating at those kind of voltages is pretty challenging. And we have some circuitry that we call our smart assist circuitry. And that means that the actual foundry bit cell itself always sees an operating voltage window as recommended by the foundry. People get quite nervous when we're saying we're operating memory at 0.6, 0.7 volts, because they just say, hey, the foundry doesn't approve of this. And we say, no, you're right, they don't. We don't work like that. The foundry bit cell will always see the correct operating voltage. As far as the outside world is concerned, the logic that is connected to the memory, however, that looks like it's operating at 0.6, 0.7 volts, which is really what gives you the power savings you need. Of course, you're not going to get the performance out of the thing. You're not going to be operating at hundreds of megahertz. But in these kind of applications, fitness trackers, health trackers, where you want to wind things down and just do a minimal level of processing, then you only need to operate it at 5, 10 megahertz. And that's exactly where our sweet spot is.
Oh, got it. So what else are you working on to drop power usage of chips? And, you know, what type of applications are you seeing in the future?
Yeah, I mean, well, we've just launched another product family we've called Minimizer, which is kind of a sister product family to our PowerMizer product family, in that it saves considerable quantities of dynamic power. And really what it is, it's our take on the register file. Register files, as you know, are, you know, the blocks of memory which are used pretty much scattered all around the logic. And they're used, you know, for clock driven domain crossing purposes. They're used for scratchpad memory for, you know, intermediate computation results, etc., where you don't want the hassle or the time delay of shipping stuff to and from SRAM. The problem is when you get big pieces of logic and lots of register files, and you actually sit down and do the sums, the register files can use a hell of a lot of power. And really, that's what we focused on addressing with Minimizer.
Okay, so Paul, how do you achieve that?
Well, what we do is, normal register files are based around the foundry bit cell, but ours are based around a custom bit cell that we've designed ourselves. And that gives you loads of advantages compared to basing it around a bit cell. The main ones being that you can very easily add multiple read and write ports. And again, this key capability of being able to operate across a wide voltage range, again, down to near threshold capabilities. So just like with our Everon memory, this can go all the way down to the same low levels of voltage as the logic can. It also has the other added benefit that because it's based on standard logic transistors, it follows the process D0, so you're not going to be hit with a yield issue. The Minimizer architecture we've developed can actually be optimized for either extremely low power or high performance. So let me give you a couple of examples. One of our customers used Minimizer in a 16 nanometer AI core that delivers a wide range of performance, going from 0.45 volts and delivering 100 megahertz performance all the way up to 0.8 volts with speeds in excess of 500 megahertz. Power savings they saw were more than 60% compared to the off-the-shelf solution. And again, as I said before, this is without the added hassle of more level shifters, multiple power rails, and all the verification problems. Another customer who we recently did a joint press release with, SemiDynamics, they're developing a high performance vector processor based on RISC-V. Minimizer for them meant we could deliver a 2-write, 4-read port solution capable of delivering more than 2.5 gigahertz in a 12 nanometer process. The good thing from their perspective, what they like about it is it's more than 30% lower area compared to a flop-based implementation. And again, with really significant power savings. So Minimizer really is quite an incredible architecture, optimized for either very low power or alternatively can also be optimized for high performance and still deliver power and area savings.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, you know, the market really is moving directly towards you. So timing is good. But, you know, one other thing, I noticed that you're moving into the quantum realm, which is a specific interest of mine. You know, you made a recent announcement about leading a UK consortium to develop IP needed to create control ASICs that can operate well below the usual temperature range for our standard chips. I guess it was near absolute zero. How are you doing that and why?
Yeah, well, it's been quite an interesting ride for us, actually. We found out that the UK government was really keen to push this field and really try to propel the UK to become a leading player in this field. So we actually led a consortium. There were seven of us in the consortium to develop what we call cryogenic CMOS. So the challenge for developers of quantum computers is that these qubits, they operate very low temperatures, anything down to, as you said, almost absolute zero, somewhere around 100 millikelvin to 4 Kelvin, typically. And at the moment, what the developers do is they have a whole bunch of cables which run into the cryostat where these things are held very cold. And the control electronics sits outside operating at room temperature, because typically that's where most electronics is characterized to work. Well, we say room temperature, of course, -40 to 125 is the range that we all know and love for semiconductors. So what they need to do if they're going to expand the number of qubits to really kind of deliver on the promise of quantum computing is they need to increase the number of qubits dramatically. Typically, I think some of the leading quantum computers got around 56 or 72 qubits. If they can get them up to 1,000 or tens of thousands, then these things will become so much more powerful. The only way they can do that is by migrating the control electronics down into the cryostat. And of course, we in the semi industry know exactly how you go about miniaturizing electronics. You design SoCs. So how do you do that? Because, as I said before, standard foundry PDKs are qualified from -40 to 125. So as part of our consortium, we've got some really powerful members in that consortium. We've got Synopsys, their TCAD division based in Glasgow. We've got Professor Asen Atanov's new company, SemiWise, who are, again, transistor modeling experts. Glasgow University, who are a center of quantum excellence, and also the device modeling group. We've also got a company called Oxford Instruments, who are the world leader in cryostats, as well as two quantum compute companies, notably Universal Quantum and CQC. So the idea is that we're going to take measurements of silicon down at these very low temperatures, should I say, and we're going to feed those measurements into Synopsys and SemiWise and Glasgow University, and they're the modeling people, they're the experts in the TCAD and the PDK creation. And what we'll do is we will recenter PDKs from -40 to 125 down to these very low temperatures. We then at Shawcor are going to be developing a whole range of quantum IP, quantum control IP, that will mean that we can offer a portfolio of IP so that other quantum compute companies who want to design their control electronics, their control ASICs, they can come to us and we can license some of this technology and they'll be able to design their own chips. What we're really seeking to do, just as the fabless model has kind of in many ways has democratized the whole of the fabless industry and made ASIC design available to all, you know, we want to do the same for the quantum compute space.
That's great. Yeah, it's of great interest to me, the quantum compute space. So I will be following, but that's great information. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, this is a good place to stop. Thank you, Paul, for your time. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the SemiWiki Semiconductor Insider podcast series. And have a good day.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.